Coming up, three questions that you need to ask when you are confronted or in the middle of a job crisis. And then Dell, famous computer maker, got an interesting new policy on remote workers. We'll break it down and coach you up. Welcome to the Ken Coleman Show, where our aim is to help you grow personally so that you can advance professionally and then lead effectively. All right, we're going to talk about when the you-know-what hits the fan today, right? What do we do when bad stuff happens at the office? What do we do? Because there are many crises, there are big crises, there are crises of all size and flavor, and it's been my experience and my observation that a lot of leaders and the people that they lead don't handle crisis well. And I want to take this on. So we're going to answer this question. When the wheels fall off at work, what do you do to get the car rolling again? Now, as humans, we know that change is constant and change is unavoidable. So we just start there. Change in this current work environment with the advance of technology, artificial intelligence, political policies, pandemics, hello. Here's what we need to know, folks, if we're going to be serious in growing professionally and leading effectively. Change is constant. It's just coming at us. And change is unavoidable. Yet, most people never learn how to deal with the most negative type of change, and that's what we're going to focus on today, crisis. Now, again, could be small crisis, medium-sized crisis, or large crisis, but this is a missed opportunity. Because if you want to lead up or lead around, or if you are the leader and you learn how to deal with and lead through crisis, let me tell you something. Your effectiveness as a leader will absolutely exponentially multiply, and your credibility and your opportunity to grow will come as a result of it. You think just for a moment, I want everybody to just kind of quickly go with me into your mind's eye, go back, and I want you to think of a time in history, whether it be way, way, way back or modern history, when we saw a crisis moment in society and a leader handled it well, and then how did their personal brand and how did their trajectory change? I'll give you one example from my life. I'll never forget it. For my generation, 9/11 was our crisis moment for our generation. You have my parents' generation. It was when Kennedy was shot. Before 9/11, it was the space shuttle Challenger blowing up. I was a school kid. I was at home sick that day, and I watched it explode on television. So there are moments like this. And so if we go to 9/11, and just to kind of play this out and set this really quick, and then we'll dive in to how you handle crisis. Rudy Giuliani was the mayor of New York. I think he had good political currency at the time. And again, spare me the comments on what you think about him now. I'm not interested. I ain't going to read them, so spare me. But I'm not talking about who he is now. I'm saying this is a guy who was a mayor of New York, and when 9/11 happened, he was a voice of calm. He was a voice of authority. And as a result, Rudy Giuliani's personal brand expanded. And then it was years later where he was considered as a leading candidate for president. Now, it never happened. And we know his story now. But watch this. Whether he was a great leader in the moment or not, that's for other people to decide. But I can tell you that the way he came across in a moment of crisis, it lifted him. All right. So that's the setting. And we all understand that. So if you prove that you know how to handle a crisis, you'll become one of the most trusted and credible people in your office. And I got news for you. This opportunity is coming. You may be in the middle of one right now, and I hope it helps. So how do you handle a work crisis? Well, here's what I believe. You got to ask yourself, because we want stable-mindedness. We need calm in the midst of crisis. In the midst of a storm, we need somebody who's anchored. And these three questions, if you ask them and answer them, it will anchor you in crisis. By the way, this has a personal application as well. Here's the first question. What is actually happening? what is actually happening. This person is saying this is happening. This person is saying this is happening. The media is saying this is happening. This politician is saying this is happening. Wait. What's actually happening? This is a personal question. You have to lean in and go, what's actually happening? This is about, watch, staying calm enough, concerned, yes, but calm enough to truly assess the situation, to face the ugly truth. Now this is key. Watch this. I'm going to actually go, okay, I see what's happening up here. The way to manage crisis is to go, okay, I see what's happening up here. What's happening under here? What's causing all of this? This is where great leaders and responsible people and great parents, this is where they meet their metal. So in this moment, you're not going, this is, my thinking here is not what should have happened or what isn't happening. Because most people, by the way, they love to sit around in the middle of the crisis and they talk about those things. What should have happened and all this. We need to go, no. What's happening right now? Number two. Once we have been responsible enough, brave enough, patient enough to dig into what's actually happening in this moment of crisis, and we're at the source, now we have a true understanding. True understanding. This is where critical thinking comes in. Okay? So, up here, we're just kind of looking up, and we're diving. Now we're at the source. So now critical thinking comes in. And this question is, what needs to happen next? I could have also said, what needs to happen now? But what needs to happen next? This is about prioritizing action steps. What needs to happen for us to resolve said crisis? And that leads to this. Who needs to do what? Say, what needs to happen now or next turns into who needs to do what. Okay? This is how we take a crisis and all of the emotion wrapped around the crisis, and this is how we now begin to assert some control on what we can do. Now, remember, control is limited, and control can be an illusion if we don't drive these first two steps. Because when I figure out what's really happening and then what needs to happen next, I am determining what I can control. And once we humans, our brain and our heart, boy, when they get aligned, it's powerful what the human spirit can endure and overcome. Did you catch that? Listen, for parents for a second, get this. Your kid's going through a crisis. You got to walk them through these questions. You got to walk through these questions. What's actually happening? What needs to happen next? Because when we get there, our heads, the logic, our heart, the emotion, they can be aligned and we can endure the storm and we can overcome as a result. Because now we know what we can't control. We can't control it all. There's some things we can control. And you lock a human in on, this is what you can control. Watch out. Number three, last question. What needs to be communicated? We know what's really going on. We now know what needs to happen next. And then number three, what needs to be communicated? This is about de-escalating all of the emotion of everybody else, because you as the leader have come to the table and you said, here's what we know. And when we see a president or a mayor or a CEO in a crisis moment come and speak clearly, this is what's really happening. Here's what we know. Here's what we are going to do. And here's how we're going to do it and why we're going to do it. This is the communicating. And so even as bad news, transparency with your customer or your team or your kids, your spouse, it ultimately erases the tension. Because remember, the not knowing is what drives everyone's fear and anxiety. So why does all this matter? What's the reason that we share these three questions, because if you can react well when crisis hits you, you will set yourself apart as someone who can be trusted with more responsibility. And that's a great reputation. And then just more than the reputation and opportunity that it will provide for you, you become better each time at handling crisis. And we need more men and women. We need more kids, more teenagers, more college kids who know how to manage a crisis. Hope that helps you. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. So, are you an introvert or are you an extrovert? And I think the world has been unfairly built towards the extroverts. And I'm an extrovert, so I can say that, right? And an extroverted world can be energy sapping for an introvert. And we all have different batteries, if you will, social batteries. And it's okay. There's no right. There's no wrong. But this is important. Your social battery needs to stay at a healthy level, or else you get burned out. And you get burned out, that affects you physically, mentally, emotionally, and it can really affect you in your professional growth. So it's important that you know what your social battery is and then how to recharge if a lot of the work activities you do drain you. I want you to think about starting therapy with BetterHelp. BetterHelp is flexible to fit into your schedule because it's completely online. It's super easy to get started with just a short questionnaire that then matches you with a licensed therapist. This is my favorite part. They allow you to switch therapists at any time for no extra cost because you got to find your person. So I want you to find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Ken today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ken. All right, we got another company that's its leadership is acting like, scorned teenagers. I'm not trying to be critical. I'm not trying to be unkind. Just letting it call it like it is. Dell is the latest company to just come up with a policy that I think looks so good on a whiteboard. And then they don't actually run it by some people. Like what I'm about to describe, Alex, I think could have been solved if they would have walked out of the room with the whiteboard and they'd have called 10 people from different divisions of the company that aren't in leadership and said, hey, can you join us in the room here? We want to run this idea by you. I really believe it could have been solved. I do think it's that simple. But again, one of the things that I'm going to always attempt to do on this program is show leaders the bridge between policy and people. My gosh, one of the ways to just make people feel insignificant and drive good people away is to come up with policies that are anti-people. Because a great business idea that is anti-people makes it a bad idea. Here we go. This is the story. This is a Business Insider article. Dell is the computer company, been around a long time. And Dell had a hybrid working culture before it became cool. In other words, before the pandemic struck. For over a decade, or right around a decade, Dell has allowed hybrid working. So hybrid working is, if you're not familiar with this, some days out of the office, and some days in the office. Well, just last month, in February, Dell introduced a new return-to-office mandate with punitive measures for those who want to stay at home. Under the new policy, Dell staff were told that from May on, so they got a couple months to kind of swallow this, that employees will be classified two ways. One as hybrid, two as remote. Hybrid workers will be required to come into an approved office a minimum of 39 days per quarter. So that's about 3 days a week. Now, staff can opt to be fully remote. They can self-select and go, no, I don't want to do that. I'm going to be remote. But, dum, dum, dum. This option, the fully remote option, has a downside. If you classify and decide to work 100% remote, you will not be considered for a promotion and you will not be able to change roles. Hey, you want to work remote? Good on you. We're okay with it. Oh, by the way, you're stuck. You will not be promoted and you cannot make a change internally. This is mind-blowing to me. I have no problem with Dell saying that we are not for remote work, because that's what this is saying. It's passive aggressive, but why be passive? Well, let's be aggressive. What Dell should say is, we are no longer going to allow remote work. And we know that that's not a good thing for some of you, and some of you will be leaving us. And so if you were self-selecting to leave, we want to create a transition plan to where we don't interrupt the productivity of the organization. And we can replace you, and we have a plan. And honestly, we're grateful for your service. We understand that you want to work remote only. And so we want to come up with a transition plan to where you leave well. Now, that to me is a very mature leadership decision. Smart, too. Now, that's their prerogative. I'm okay. I wouldn't argue with you for 2 seconds, because I think remote work, hybrid work, in the office work, I think that comes down to culture and systems. So culture are shared behaviors, and then the systems are how we keep shared behaviors moving and you know, congruent and all that stuff. So I'm okay with that. But what they're doing here is passive aggressive, and they're essentially just saying, we don't want you around. They're essentially going, if you self-select as remote, good on you. You're dead to us. In fact, in a program meeting with the team, I wrote this down. It's literally like me and Stacy saying to my 3 kids, if you don't do such and such and such, you can live here, but we're not going to love you. I think it's the equivalent of that. We have a set of rules in our house. And if the kids don't live by the rules, what do? Obviously, there's consequences. There's conversations. What we don't do is say, you know, I've talked to you about this 3 or 4 times. And at this point, your mom and I are basically saying, if you don't completely comply with these things, we're not going to kick you out. But we're not going to love you. And you're not going on vacation with us. And we're not going to help you with gas in your car, and you're not going to get to, you know, it's that kind of idea. Because if a parent were to do that, what are you saying to your kids there? You're going, if it's not totality of my way, then go ahead and hit the highway. So that's what Dell is saying. They're going, hey, if you want to be remote, great, you can do it. You will not get promoted, and you can't even change your position. So welcome to purgatory. Now, what kind of message does that send to everybody? All right, so let's look at the groups. So, presumably, there are people who are full-time remote, and they're going, oh, you're just strong-arming me here. You are telling me to leave. You're telling me that you don't want me around, that there's no value attached to me unless I'm in the office the days you want me in the office. Let me tell you something. I don't care if you disagree with me or not. You're wrong. I'm right. That's what the message is. The message is, you are only valuable to us if you do things the way that we want you to do it. That's what it's saying. Okay. And we're not talking about normal policies here. We're saying you were doing it this one way for a long time, and now you're making the switch, and that's your prerogative. But if you tell somebody that you give them an option, but the option is staying stuck with no growth, then my point is you're devaluing them because there's no real decision for them. Presumably some will go, all right, well, that's fine by me. I'm great in this position. I like my 401k. I got 8 years left. Okay, I get that. That's one group. Now there's another group that goes, wait a second, I've been super effective and I've been remote this whole time and I could consider it, but gosh, this feels yuck. Sure, I'll do it. I don't want to leave because I want to grow. But it just feels yuck because you didn't sit down with them and go, hey, here's what we want. And so I just don't think that Dell went about this the right way, because I think the right way to do it is to say, hey, here's what we're doing. Here's why we're doing it. Here's how we're going to make this favorable to you. And we value you, but we also value being in the office for X amount of days. Here's why. You may not agree, but we want to make this transition really easy and healthy for you. And we value you. We also understand if you don't want to do this, that's your prerogative too. And we want to make sure that you leave well and we break up well. But this just kind of, this, it's what it feels like to me, doesn't it? It's like, we got you. You can do it. But you're not going to like it. And you will do as I say. I mean, look, that's just too authoritative. That's never going to work. It's never going to develop culture. It's never going to develop trust. It's never going to develop transparency. And I think it's good. Even the people who stay, I think they're going to feel gross about it. And I would suggest to you that we're going to hear about this, that they're going to regret that decision in the future. So there you go. Treat people like people. Don't come up with a policy and then figure out how to deal with the people part. It's got to be in the beginning. Welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show. Hey, if you'd ever like to get coached up, you can just email us, ask@kencoleman.com, and we'll get you in there. We'd love to coach you up. So let's get started. We got Silas, who's joining us in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Oh, I'd love to be from Oshkosh. It'd just be fun to say. Silas, what's going on?
Hey, Ken. Big fan of their show. Just discovered it recently.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Welcome aboard.
Yeah. Yeah, so my question, I've been living here in Oshkosh for just under a year. I moved out of my parents' house and raised in a very traditional house where, you know, you get a job, get a career, settle down. And I'm a very creative person.
Yeah.
I really enjoy I've always enjoyed creating. And now I'm kind of at an impasse where, I'm currently just doing DoorDash, as my main income. And I'm wondering if I should get a regular job. I've had regular jobs before, or if I should support myself with DoorDash and completely go for a creative career in video, because that's really where my passion is.
Yes. Yes. You should do the latter. I would not limit yourself to DoorDash, and we're going to talk through that. But
okay.
I hear a young man. How old are you?
I'm 20 years old.
Yeah, I hear a 20-year-old young man who really does know what he loves. Now, how you're going to do that type of creative work, I think that's still up in the air. And I think that will be, yeah. I think that will be discovered as you strike out on the path.
Yeah.
But I'm talking to a 20-year-old man who, if he's not careful, will wake up in 20 years, and 20 years goes by in a blink, young Silas, I can tell you.
Yeah.
And I don't want you waking up 20 years from now going, I should have went for it.
Yeah.
I love that you know what you want to do. And you're dealing with some pressure, aren't you?
Oh, a lot. A lot of pressure from
talk
family.
To me about it. Tell me.
I have a dad who, well, I have a bunch of siblings, and so I had a dad who worked his whole life just to put food on the table. So that's the first place his mind goes, is he, like, you know, you want that stable income, you want that, and he doesn't see that a business could be a stable income. He sees it as a side project, something that you can do if you get time, if you find the time.
He thinks being self-employed in general is risky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it is. But so is working for some guy and some company.
Yeah.
That's just as risky. Because here's what I know about working for somebody else. Something goes squirrely, something goes wrong, could be the economy, could be their balance sheet. They go through tough times. Guess what? You're gone.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to be fired or laid off or overlooked by someone else than it is to do that to yourself, true or false?
Very true.
Yeah. I think your dad's coming from a place of, he had how many kids?
He has 9.
He's got 9 kids.
Yeah,
let me just tell you something.
Siblings.
Bro, listen to me. I got 3 kids, and they're always in the back of my mind and supporting all their stuff. I mean, there is a, I don't want to say it's a fear, but there is a heightened awareness that can easily move into fear for a parent and for a dude who's got to feed 9 freaking kids.
Yeah.
So I get that.
Yeah.
And so your dad is giving you advice based on his own outlook. And that's kind of normal, don't you think?
Yeah.
Don't you think my advice I'm giving you today comes from my outlook?
I would believe it would.
Great. So here's what I want. I want to honor your dad. I want you to honor your dad.
Yeah.
And just go, I love my dad. I respect my dad. But my dad's got these glasses on. I got my reading glasses here, so I'm putting my glasses on. And so when I put these glasses on, these are my glasses, right?
Yep.
And what you got to do is go, okay, I'm going to, when my dad gives me advice, I'm going to allow myself to see through his glasses. And then I'm going to take his glasses off, and I'm going to put my glasses back on. And then when I get advice from somebody else, Ken Coleman, I call Ken today. And I'm going to look through his glasses. But I'm going to take Ken's glasses off too. And then I'm going to decide what I think I should do. Because I think you got a good head, and I think you got a good heart. So, having said that, I think you need to, at 20, I think you need to, you got 2 hands, and I want you to picture you holding your hands out in front of you, okay?
Okay.
And in one hand, you need to be making as much money as you can, and I'll get to that in a second, as you can, and then you also, in the other hand, need to be creating on some level and doing on some level the video, the short films, that creative stuff that you get the juice from. So if it's DoorDash, great. And then you're doing DoorDash 40 hours a week or 50 hours a week. And then 20 hours a week, you're shooting stuff and you're posting it. You're out meeting people going, hey, can I shoot a video for you? You're finding a realtor going, hey, I got a drone. I can shoot some cool video for you and edit it and give it to you. You're going to a local church, you know, whatever. You've got 2 hands, and the more stable that you can be at 20 and 21 and 22 allows you to continue being more creative. What you don't want to do at 20 is go all in where you're not making any money at all. And then there comes a point where you got to have some money, and the ability or the lack of ability to take care of yourself hinders your creativity. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense.
So I'm going all in on the commitment. Mentally and emotionally, I am striking out on the path today. The creative path, the film path, the video path, however you want to define it. Yeah. All in today. Now, that's the mentally, I'm committing. I am steeling myself. I'm going, I know that I was created to do this, and I'm going to do this. Now, while I'm mentally and emotionally committed, all in, I know that it's not going to happen overnight for me.
Yeah.
And so it's the tension between the day job and the dream job. I did it with three kids. You don't have that kind of responsibility. And yeah. And so I would be attempting now to, as quickly as possible, and I don't know how much you can do this in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, if I can replace Grubhub or Uber Eats or whatever you said you were going to do, mm-hmm. if I can replace that with working for a video production company, for instance, or working for a church in their video department, if it's a large church that has this, or whatever, yeah. if I can get paid to actually do some stuff that I would never do for myself, but it's still creative and it's still in the video lane, that's even better.
Yeah.
All right. I wanted to shut up for a second. We got about 2 minutes. Are we where we need to be today? What else do you need to talk about?
I think that's a lot of what I'm thinking. Because the biggest thing is that I want to be able to eventually have a family and provide for them.
Yeah.
But I've seen people where they had dreams and they just weren't able to.
Tell me your dream. You're 20 right now. Take me 10 years from now. Let's only go 10 years or 15 years. Let's just have fun. What's the dream?
We're going 10 years from now. 10, 15 years, I do want to be married, and I do want to have a kid or two.
I get that. Tell me the professional dream. And we're taking all restrictions off right now.
Yeah. Well, I want to be making movies, and right. I want to be doing commercials, because what Good. Movies and commercials have in common is telling stories.
Do you want to be doing local commercials and regional commercials in Oshkosh, Wisconsin? What do you want to be doing? Give me the dream, man.
I mean, I would love, starting in Oshkosh, but Chicago isn't even that far from here.
Yeah, but no, I'm trying to take, let's say I can snap my fingers right now.
Okay.
And we're 10 years in the future, Silas. And you're like, you're freaking kidding me, Ken. What? Come on, give me the you're freaking kidding me dream.
Okay. We're going there. It's like actually making movies, telling stories, inspiring people. That is what I love to do.
Got it.
And inspiring.
You're going to have a plan to get out of Oshkosh for that.
Okay. Yeah.
The Proximity Principle, have you read it? You're new to the show. I'm guessing you haven't. It's my gift to you. Whether you want the audio, the ebook, or the written version, I'm going to give it to you. And you got to commit to read this book, because I'm not making you pay for it. I'm giving it to you. Okay, and I want you to read this book and go, all right, where do I need to be at the age of 20 to have a shot to be making movies 10 years from now? You're 20, brother. You're not married. You don't have kids. It is all in time. I'm either going to Atlanta, LA, New York, wherever. I've got to go work for somebody who's doing this stuff. I got to be hanging around people like me that are my age that want to do this stuff. I am getting in proximity. The Proximity Principle says in order to do what Silas wants to do, he's got to be around people that are doing it and in places where it is happening. I'm going to say it again. In order to do what Silas wants to do, he's got to be around people that are making movies. He's got to be in places where movies are being made. All in. I'm going to get there. And when I'm around the right people, guess what happens? They introduce me to more of the right people. And then they point me to the right places where more right people are. And all of a sudden, Silas, who commits at the age of 20, honoring his mother and his father, but saying, I'm going all in. And if I got to move to Atlanta, Georgia, where 80% of the films are being shot right now, and I get a job in Atlanta, and I roommate with two or three other guys that are going after like me, and I live on ramen noodles and whatever, and I take any PA job that I can take, and I'm making 16, 18 bucks an hour as a PA, and I'm driving at night, I am all in. That's the play.
Yeah.
You willing to do it?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Get about it. Hang on the line. Let's get him a book. Get him started. If it were me, I'd head to Atlanta. I'd pack up everything I own, and I'd go there, and I'd get a job, and I'd get about five roommates, cut my expenses, and I'd work on every lot there is because that's where it's happening. And I'd take people to coffee. I would take people to lunch. I'd work on everything that I could possibly work on. Why? Because Atlanta's where it's happening, and it's a whole lot cheaper to live than LA, and there's no earthquakes. This is the Ken Coleman Show.
Thanks for listening to the Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.